The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The first day I got me a fuel pump, and the next day I got me an engine and a trunk. Then I got me a transmission and all the chrome.
Morning glory, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. This
big lunchbox like nuts and bolts.
Johnny Cash.
Shocks, but the big stuff we snuck out my buddy's mobile home. Now up to now my plan went all right.
He's building a car one piece at a time.
And that's when we noticed that something was definitely wrong.
Why am I playing this on December 1? Rabbit.
And the motor turned out to be a
2021 live from the Beltway.
The holes were gone.
Because it,
so we drilled it out.
Is an analogy used in the Washington Post reporting this morning about Omicron.
We had that engine running just like a song. Now the headlights, they
and I thought
side. We had two on the
that may explain things right to people about Omicron.
Switch, all three of them come on.
He's going around stealing pieces from everywhere.
Funny too, but we put it together, and when we
quote,
through, well, that's when we noticed that we only had
one. Omicron is like the song One Piece at a Time by Johnny Cash, said Benjamin Newman, a virologist at Texas A&M, to the Washington Post in an email. It's made of mutations that are somewhat successful separately in other variants, but together it is hard to say that it looks weird. It's a very dangerous variant. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Good first day of December to you. A lot of Omicron coming up. A lot. But first, and if you have a comment on it, call me 1-800-520-1234. I want to stop and ask you to pray for the people of Oakland County and Oxford Township, Michigan, where three students were murdered, eight injured, three of whom are in critical condition, a 15-year-old boy, a 17-year-old girl, and a 14-year-old girl who's on a ventilator. And, of course, hundreds traumatized in the high school. Well, the high school gets kudos for me because when a 15-year-old boy walked in with the handgun that his father had bought legally on Black Friday and opened fire, I believe a total of 17 people were wounded in some way, three dead, three struggling for their lives. And those three who are dead could be any kid anywhere. I'm looking at their names in the New York Post report, not the Washington Post report. Tate Meyer, a 16-year-old standout football player at Oxford High School, died of his wounds on the way to the hospital in the back seat of a patrol car. Hannah St. Juliana, a 14-year-old. Madison Baldwin, a 17-year-old. This could be kids anywhere, any high school, anywhere. This is a TikTok video made by one of the students who was not injured. If you're watching on the Salem News Channel, please do download it. It's just better to watch the Salem News Channel. This is what they would see, and listen to what they say.
Yes! Sheriff's office. Safe to come out.
Let me stop for a second and set this up. The video is of about, I would guess, 15 to 20 students inside. They're very well trained. The moment that the PA comm said active shooter, the students who do not have a teacher in this room zipped into action, barricaded the door with tables, crouched down, began talking to each other in not panicky, huddled voices, and there's someone outside the door, could be the shooter. We don't know. The report doesn't know. And this is what is said.
Yes! Sheriff's office! Safe to come out.
Yeah, it's safe to come out.
Now, we're not willing to take that risk right now.
I can't hear you.
We're not taking that risk right now.
Okay, well, come to the door and look at my hand, bro.
No. Yeah, bro.
He said bro.
Red flag.
Go. parking truck.
And then they begin exiting the window, not panicky, running to an open door where a guard was. The sheriff's deputy said, "Sheriff's deputy, open the door and look at my badge, bro." And the kid said, he said, "Bro, red flag." And then the kid scampered. Not panicked, no screaming. They're trained. America has trained its high school students, sadly, necessarily, to respond this way. Prayers for everyone involved. There's not much to say about tragedies like this. We know it's a 15-year-old boy. We'll find out more. We'll tell you. Unlike the Waukesha shooter, there is no backstory other than disease and illness of the mind and probably bullying, but we don't know that. We'll find that out, and I'll report it when it comes up. Omicron mutations alarm scientists, but new variant first must prove it can outcompete Delta. This is the Joel Achenbach story from the Washington Post this morning. I try and read one story all the way through, so the Post does a very good job on Delta, on COVID. When the variant now known as Omicron first appeared on a global database of coronavirus genomic sequences, scientists were stunned. This was the weirdest creature they'd seen to date. It had an unruly swarm of mutations. Many were known to be problematic, impeding the ability of antibodies to neutralize the virus. But there had never been a variant with so many mutations gathered into a package. Even though scientists recognized some of these mutations, others were new and utterly enigmatic. "We have seen these mutations in other strains in twos and threes, and each time they were a little harder to neutralize, but didn't spread particularly well. Now, altogether, it's a complete black box," Benjamin Newman, a virologist at Texas A&M University, said in an email. Of the many questions about Omicron, the overriding one is whether it's as bad as it looks at first glance. President Biden on Monday expressed confidence the United States can handle the new variant. Great. In a preliminary technical brief, the World Health Organization said overall global risk is very high. In his remarks prepared in advance of congressional testimony, Jerome Powell warned the recent rise in coronavirus cases posed downside risk to employment, economic activity, increased uncertainty for inflation. The significance of Omicron pivots on several unknowns. Is it more transmissible than the Delta variant? Can it cause more severe illness? And can it erode or completely evade immunity, whether induced by vaccines or previous infections? That would be natural immunity. Earlier variants, including Alpha and Delta, mutated in ways that enhanced their transmissibility. But scientists, well, they're wondering. Omicron has 30 mutations scattered on the three major prongs of the spike protein that is essential to the virus's ability to infect cells. Omicron is like the song "One Piece at a Time" by Johnny Cash, repeating that, where he puts together a car from stolen bits of lots of different cars. It's made of mutations that were somewhat successfully separate in other variants, but together it's hard to say more than it looks weird. Scientists don't want to get ahead of the facts. No one yet knows how this variant behaves in the real-world situation, but if it has a high degree of relative immune evasiveness, vaccine makers will have to revise their formula. Already it works in some places in preliminary stages. This would be a major setback to the world's efforts to emerge from a pandemic. We're in the Delta pandemic now. Does this outperform Delta? To be determined, said Robert Gary, a virologist at Tulane University who has scrutinized mutations in Omicron. Delta's a pretty good virus, right? It's good in terms of being transmissible. This one would have to show some extraordinary characteristics to outcompete it. Kristen Anderson, an immunologist at Scripps Research Institute, said, "The only thing I have is somewhat moderate confidence is that I think this will be the most immune-evasive variant we have seen to date. Other than that, it's simply too early to tell. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is it? It's either a 3, a 10, or anywhere in between." That's helpful. The vaccine makers are split. I told you about Moderna's CEO yesterday. Wall Street Journal says Omicron variant sends policymakers scrambling. OECD warns that Omicron may intensify supply shortages and inflation. LeBron James got COVID, by the way. And Boris Johnson and the British Parliament have imposed new COVID restrictions, including a mandatory 10-day individual quarantine to last until March 24th of next year. In Israel, two doctors are infected with Omicron confirmed cases in Israel rise to 4. Stricter coronavirus testing is being weighed for all travelers in the United States. In an early test, Regeneron drug, a great therapeutic, has been found to be less effective against Omicron. Merck's COVID pill, approved yesterday, thank goodness, may not have anything to do with it. Not good news, America, not good news. More coming up. Get vaccinated, get a booster, don't close the schools, don't do mandatory lockdowns, act like adults if you're older and infirm. Stay away from people until we know a lot more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Let me finish the rundown quickly, and I will be having some great guests today. Virginia's Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin is coming along. Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan will be here. Congressman Mike Gallagher will be here to tell me that the Packers won and the Browns lost, but I already know that. Brian Westbury will explain whatever it is Jerome Powell said to the Congress yesterday. And then at 8:33 or the third hour, wherever you are, Professor Robbie George of Princeton University, he's the McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence there, brilliant man. Ryan Anderson, the President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, probably the most influential Catholic public intellectual at work today on public policy, will join me to talk about the Dobbs case, which is being heard today before the United States Supreme Court. Tomorrow, abortion might appropriately be returned to the states. They could actually act tomorrow. Any day between now and the end of the court, this court could hand down a decision, and I wish they move expeditiously, to strike down Roe v. Wade and Casey, the two cases that have prevented states from legislating when women may abort babies, and that had long been, until 1973, the province of the states to regulate when and where, and it ought to go back to the states, and we ought to get out of this constitutional twisted pretzel that we are in. And we'll talk to Ryan and Robbie about that in the last hour of today's show. Now, you might think I am hoping for that because I'm Catholic. I am very Catholic. Yesterday I went to Mass because it was the last day of November. And we Catholics believe that there's a purgatory. And the Pope did a special thing this year. He said the indulgence for the dead is available through the end of November. And when I banged up my foot, I screwed up my whole list of people I wanted to pray for the indulgence. And you have to receive sacramental confession. You must receive Holy Communion on the day you, quote, do the work and visit a Catholic cemetery and pray for the dead. So I limped over to church yesterday at noon. I'm not a saint. I'm just self-interested in my friends. And did that. It was St. Andrew's feast day, which I didn't know, patron saint of Scotland. But the priest was wearing red, so I learned something new yesterday. Great homilist, by the way. Follow me, and I will make you. Great. That's a line when Jesus calls Andrew to be a disciple. He says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And first you got to act, you got to follow, and then he makes you into what he wants you to be. That's the Christian doctrine. That's what Jesus does. So I heard a good sermon, pretty short mass as well. Catholics like 35 minutes, done, boom, gone, good sermon. You know, 5-minute homily, perfect. This priest is so smart. I really like this priest. And then hobbled over to the Catholic cemetery and did my prayers for the intention of the popes and the prayer for the dead. And whatever that does, church says it's pretty powerful, so someone who's dead. The door's closed now, or it's November 1 through 30th. Got it done. But I am a believer that life begins at conception, but that's not why I want Dobbs to overturn Roe and Casey. I want Dobbs to overturn Roe and Casey because it's destroyed constitutional law's coherence for 50 years. And we need to get the Constitution back to its structural organization so that states do what states are supposed to do and the federal government does what the federal government is supposed to do. So there's a Mississippi case. The Mississippi legislature that passed a law saying no abortions after a fetus's heartbeat is heard. They're basically saying a baby is a baby when a baby is a baby. And that heartbeat bill is popular, and I expect it will be widely copied around the country if Dobbs does, as I pray it does, strike down. I think the vote will be 6-3. I believe the vote will be 6-3. I believe Justices Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett will join Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, and they will be led by Chief Justice Roberts. And they will write an opinion that says, Roe is no good, Casey is no good, all of our abortion jurisprudence is no good. We are starting over, and we're starting over by saying states control reproductive rights, and there will be no restrictions on speech that are specifically abortion-derived. I've been teaching con law now for 25 years. It is necessary. You've got, if the court goes on for another 500 years, 1,000 years, as I hope, you've got to get off the wrong road. You've got to turn around when you've made a wrong turn. They have made a terrible wrong turn, and they've been getting further lost in the woods for 50 years. We've got to stop it. That happens today in argument. Could be tonight if they want to act, and I hope they do. I hope they do. I'll be right back with more news of the day when we return to the Hugh Hewitt Show. A couple bits of more news, please. CNN has suspended Chris Cuomo indefinitely. I like Chris. He has done a very bad thing in the world of news, using his position in the news to advance and protect his brother. He's been suspended indefinitely. You can't do that. You can't protect your friends by manipulating the news, not even if it's your brother. And I hope it works out. I hope they figure it out. Jeff Zucker's a fair guy. They will consider the details. They will look at past presidents, like the NBA suspending somebody. It's internal to CNN. It's actually not a matter of law. He did nothing illegal. It's just, what do you do in the news business? You can't self-deal. If I made, you know, in the radio world, there's something called payola. It's dead now. Hopefully it's dead. You know, I look at Gallagher's palaces and I say, nah, Gallagher would never do that. I know Mike. He's the most honest guy in the world, even if he is playing Daddy Warbucks right now. If someone were to give me money and say, here's, you know, $100, $500, $1,000, please plug my restaurant. It's a wonderful restaurant in the District of Columbia. That's payola. I'd go to jail. Salem would fire me. Every radio station would throw me off the air, and they would be right to do so. Because if there's anyone on radio or on the Salem News Channel who doesn't know it, payola is illegal. Now, I can tell you that Birch Gold is my sponsor. And Birch Gold pays Salem money to have me do the market update, which I would do anyway, but tell you about it and put a Birch Gold plug at the beginning and a Birch Gold plug at the bottom. That's fine. That's fair. The FCC agrees that's the way to do it. Birch Gold is a sponsor. So if you're going to buy gold, go to hughgold.com, because I buy my gold from Birch Gold. And they're very, very good, and they're very, very ethical, and they would not have it any other way. And so if you're going to buy gold, buy it from Birch Gold, hughgold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. What you really ought to do with them is diversify your portfolio in the event that inflation becomes what I think it's going to become. Not hyperinflation. I think the Fed will throw the brakes on when we hit 10%, which I think we're already at, but we'll ask Westbury about that. Yesterday, the Dow went down 652 points. Who told you that might happen? Oh, that would be me, after the Moderna CEO's comments. Thank you, Kurt Schlichter, for noting that online. The S&P went down 88. The NASDAQ went down 245. It just kills people in the media to say someone else was first. I was first on coronavirus by like weeks, months, in fact. December and January of 19 and 20, I was out there saying, and I'm first on Omicron, because I absorb, as a lawyer absorbs, all sorts of facts. And I say, you take a little bit from here, a little bit from there, the pattern develops of alarm and concern. And so markets sold off yesterday. What happened to gold yesterday? Let me take a look. What do you know? Gold went up to 1783, up 0.4% yesterday. What did I tell you? It was likely to go up. I told you the 10-year Treasury was likely to go down. It's one at 1.443. Why did it go down? Because Omicron. So let's go to the Omicron update after you go and buy your gold at hughgold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. John Kennedy. Well, let's start with Justin Trudeau, Premier of Canada. Omicron is actually in Canada, not in the United States yet. Cut number 19.
Obviously, we're watching very, very closely the situation with Omicron. We know that even though Canada has very strong border measures now, We need vaccinations to come to Canada. We need pre-departure tests. We do testing on arrival. There may be more we need to do, and we'll be looking at it very carefully.
Are we going to ban more flights? Are we going to ban more flights?
And then he walked away because he doesn't know anything more than you know, other than Moderna's CEO says we're screwed. Joe Biden, Dakota County, Minnesota, went up there, and this is what he said, cut number 20 from the president.
As I told the American people yesterday, this new variant is a cause of concern, but not a cause to panic. On Thursday, I'll put forward a detailed strategy outlining how we're going to fight this COVID this winter, not with shutdowns and lockdowns, with more widespread vaccination, boosters, testing, and much more. In the meantime...
It sounds to me like Deputy President Ron Klain got to President Biden and said, here's what we're going to do. It's what I'm doing. Urge everyone to get vaccinated because Delta is out there and Delta could kill you. We have about 850 deaths a day average right now in the United States. They're all Delta. And the vast majority of them are people who aren't vaccinated. You want to play poker with your life? I can't talk you out of it. But we're long past having the government shut things down and close schools because the cost of those are now well known and they're terrible. Get a booster. Boosters increase your ability. What I don't know, because the CDC is broken and in shambles, is how much natural immunity protects you after 6 months. Does natural immunity go away like vaccine-induced immunity go away, which is why you need a booster? CDC is so screwed up, they can't answer the questions people need. Instead, Dr. Fauci goes up and argues about the January 6th committee. I've invited Dr. Fauci on, and his team actually said, are you kidding? You've criticized Dr. Fauci. Really? They said that. To which I wrote back, you know, it kind of works for my audience, too. My audience doesn't like him much. But if he's going to be the doctor to the world, he's got to talk to center-right conservatives as well as friendly confines of science. How many people do you think he talks to on a Sunday morning show that haven't already been vaccinated? Like none? People who watch Sunday morning shows are the people who are already vaccinated because they don't go to church and they're secular religionists and they are simply not going to be in the unvaccinated category. The people who aren't vaccinated, as I hear from my angry phone calls occasionally, largely reside on the center right of the country or within the African-American community. Now, I'm not going to reach the African-American community on this show except for the smart people who listen to Larry Elder every day and who do not want to be defined by race and who, in fact, affirmatively find affirmative action disgusting. But he's not going to reach the African-American community except a small slice of it on this show. He's going to reach the center-right, independents, Republicans, and Republican-curious Democrats. But he doesn't want to because I've called for his resignation. So he's got thin skin. That's what he has, thin skin. I'm kind of amazed that they admitted that. After what you wrote in the Washington Post, I called for his resignation. So what? Yeah, you know, what is this, third grade? Is it seventh grade? You can't talk to people who are civil but determined? I really was astonished by that. He's a doctor. First, do no harm and do your job, Dr. Fauci. Show up and talk to everyone. If you get a tough question, you answer it and you move on. It doesn't hurt you. You're supposed to be healing the sick and caring for the community, not shutting down conservatives who think your time is through. But he doesn't get the dummy of the day. Trevor Noah gets the dummy of the day. Now, I've long said, you take Bill Maher's earpiece off, you take Trevor Noah's earpiece off, Jon Stewart, any of them, Colbert, you put him in a room with a smart man or woman who's well-read, and you let him talk for 2 hours, there will be nothing left but ribbons of them. They will be cut to pieces by anyone who knows their way around a set of facts and how to argue. They're not smart. They're funny, and they have good timing. They're good comics. But Trevor Noah's a moron. Cut number 21.
But while most of the world is willing to wait and see, at least one person feels comfortable about making predictions.
The Moderna CEO told the Financial Times he expects the existing vaccines to be less effective against the new variant of COVID.
I think it's going to be a material drop. This was on vaccine efficacy. I just don't know how much because we still need to wait for the data. But all the scientists I've spoken to are saying this is not going to be good.
So on the one hand, almost all the Omicron cases have been mild so far. But on the other hand, the guy who stands to gain millions of dollars from new vaccines says we need new vaccines.
If we don't make a new vaccine, this disease could be with us Ferrari. I mean, forever. Sorry, I was thinking of something else. Now, look, I'm not saying that the CEO of Moderna is lying. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I don't think he's the most objective source on this topic. You know, I'll wait to hear what neutral experts say about a new vaccine. People like public health officials or the CEO of Johnson & Johnson. I mean, he's got nothing to gain because nobody's going to buy his vaccines either way. So I trust him. And also, if we do need a new vaccine for this new variant, it's not a big deal, all right, people? I see people online being like, we got to get a new shot every year. There's no way. Yeah, yeah, you know what? Maybe to not die, you might need to take 15 minutes out of your year. What? Is your life so busy that you don't have time for that? I guarantee you, at some point in the next year, you will walk by a CVS. Unless you live in the
dead. Let me explain something. Trevor Noah is a moron, and I've known this for a long time. I don't pay much attention to him. He's not very funny. He said, I'm not saying he's lying, but in fact, he did say he was lying. He slandered the CEO of Moderna. He did. He slandered him. If I was the CEO of Moderna, I would sue that son of a gun. And he's not very smart. His argument didn't make any sense. And he's not funny. But he's young. And people think he's... I don't know who watches Trevor Noah. Adam, do you watch Trevor Noah? Okay. And Dwayne, do you watch Trevor Noah?
Never. Ben? I only grabbed it because it was an Omicron cut.
Ben, did you... Do you watch Trevor Noah?
No.
No. He's a moron. And he's a libeler. He's a slanderer of a guy doing his job. All you need to do is get vaccinated and boosted. Yes. Against Delta and other COVID, they are extremely effective. He says there's a material likelihood that the changes will be dire. Report that. Don't be funny about Omicron. No, you're not funny anyway. You're stupid when you do that. ReliefFactor.com is good. Icarian and Kirkman Resveratrol Omega, it is worth taking every single day. Why? Well, if you don't like minor aches and pains, that's why. But I limped around yesterday on the feast day of St. Andrew's, learning that priests wear vestments that are red other than on Pentecost, which tells you just how good a Catholic I am. I didn't know that. Maybe I knew that when I was in Catholic school. Great vestments, by the way, red vestments. As I limped around, I'm walking funny. And the fetching Mrs. Hewitt is worried, you're going to whack out your back. I said, don't worry, relieffactor.com. I'm walking funny. I got a toe. I'll tell you about the toe later. It's not really that interesting, except that I'm tormented by my online devils, Carl Newman. And relieffactor.com, $19.95. Go and get it, and you won't feel funny if you have to walk funny with a boot or anything like that. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
The mood is right, the spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt and Paul McCartney. This song led to a sparky little commentary by the fetching Mrs. Hewitt last night, who loves everything Beatles. But she hates this song. I'm okay with the Beatles, but I love this song. I understand it's an earwig. Right? I've ruined everyone's day who hates this song, because now you're going to hear it all day long. Right? That's you, right? Oh, no. Paul McCartney earwig. What do we think about this song? Adam, good or bad? Dwayne, good or bad?
The worst Christmas song ever written or recorded.
Has Ben ever heard it before?
Have heard it.
And what do you think, Ben?
I'm kind of in Adam's boat. I'm a 50-50 kind of guy.
Like, I love it.
It'll be on the playlist.
So I heard it in the doctor's office yesterday. Where I had a wonderful exchange, and let me describe this for you because it's a quick little slice of life. I've got this broken big toe, and golly, it stings when they change the bandage on this thing, and the nail is gone, and the bone is broken, and they're worried about bone infections, so I'm taking antibiotics, blah, blah, blah. I'm not hurt. All right, I got no problems. I talk to the Semper Fi guys and gals twice a year, and I got no problems. I'm not in a Detroit high school. I'm not in a Waukesha parade victim. I have no problem. But I do have a broken toe that hurts. So a guy is a little bit older than me. I didn't know that until he told me what year he graduated. Black guy in the doctor's office. I'm wearing my my Cleveland Browns fleece proudly, despite what the Ravens did to the Browns on Monday night. Governor Hogan will never be back on this show. Never. He's bad luck, obviously. Bad juju. And so the guy says to me, go Browns. I look up. I said, Browns fan? He said, you betcha. I said, bad night Monday night. He said, yeah, it was bad night. I said, why are you a Browns fan? He said, I grew up in Cleveland. I said, where? East Cleveland. Told me it's high school. I said, I'm from Warren. We started chatting. And he'd gone to Muni a lot. And I said, you know, Muni was the best, worst stadium ever. I never saw a full game. I got behind the girder. And he laughed. He said, everyone had a girder. I said, yeah, but if you're the youngest in a family of three boys, you get the worst part of the girder. Like, I never saw a touchdown scored at the lake end of the, you know, thing. There was a pole right in front of me. You know, I'd have to move down the row, and some people would let me sit on their lap occasionally when it's small so I could see a touchdown in the end zone. Because Muni was really a horrible stadium. So we laughed. He said, but they were good. And I said, Frank Ryan, Dr. Frank Ryan, Jimmy Brown, good. And we laughed. I said, Leroy Kelly, good. And the lady said, what is wrong with you two? The Ravens won. And we both looked at her with disdain as we shuffled out. So that song was playing, so I will forever associate that song with the low point of the Browns' 2021 season, from which they will return. I have great confidence in Baker Mayfield. By the way, good sports news. Ohio State basketball beat Duke. It beat number one rated Duke last night. A little good news this morning, please. Ohio State Buckeyes beat Duke. Now, I'm not much of a college hoops fan. You know that if you've listened to me.
Do any of those basketball players play football?
Wait a minute. I want to tell you the name of their... okay, what movie is this name most likely to appear in, Dwayne? Would you bring up Dwayne's camera? We're going to test Dwayne's pop culture chops. Ohio State center, who was just amazing last night. The hero of the night was Ohio State center, who kept the Duke big man, starting center Mark Williams, out. This, the Ohio State center is named Zed Key. In what movie will Zed Key appear most likely as a character?
Zed Key?
Yes.
Sounds like a boss in Men in Black.
No! Zed Key is a Star Wars Jedi, man. Zed Key. Think about it.
Zed was the boss in Men in Black. That was the Rip Torn character.
Well, I don't care. But Zed Key, I mean, it's obviously a Jedi. We
no.
have a Jedi playing for the Buckeyes.
No.
Okay, take him off camera. Shut him down. Whenever he's disagreeing with me, you know to just X him out of there. So that's the good sports news. Also, Dr. Oz is running for Senate in Pennsylvania. Now, I swear with God as my witness, I have never laid eyes on Dr. Oz in person on TV. My wife says he's a really good guy. He's an Oprah doctor. That's a heck of an advantage. Jeff in Minnesota. Good morning, Jeff. What say you?
Good morning, Hugh. We've spoken before.
You got like a minute. We don't need a run-up. You've got to get the plane up.
Yeah, my paradigm shift on the whole on COVID just changed yesterday completely. I've had COVID twice. I had it in February 2020. I got my two shots last April. And I had it again last month. And while we were thinking these vaccines, we were thinking, hey, we're vaccinating ourselves.
How bad did you have it the second time?
Measles or mumps.
Wait, how bad did you have it the last time?
My lungs still hurt. It's been a month. But it wasn't as bad as the first time.
Milder case. Okay, so you have natural immunity and vaccine immunity, but it didn't work. So your conclusion, you got 20 seconds. Your conclusion is?
We're in a flu cycle. This is always going to be with us. We used to say before 2020, oh, the shots aren't very effective this year, or, oh, the flu is really bad.
I agree.
This year.
It's endemic. I agree. But it is a lot deadlier than the flu, although the flu can be deadly. Bottom line, elderly and medically fragile people, until we know more about Omicron, change your behaviors to reflect that we may have a new disease out there. Basically a new disease in Omicron. That's the bottom line. Elderly and medically fragile people. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. If you're buying gold, do it from Birch Gold. You can find Birch Gold at HughGold.com. I'm glad that they're sponsoring the podcast, but more importantly, I'm glad you're looking at making sure that your investment portfolio is diversified. Wealth is made in concentration and preserved in diversification, and you should diversify a part of your portfolio, 5 to 10% in gold. You can do that by rolling over a portion of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver and other precious metals depository maintained by Birch Gold. Or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box. Either way, do it from Birch Gold, which you can find at HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Now enjoy this podcast. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined this morning by Congressman Mike Gallagher. He is our regular guest on things going on in the House, and he's going to be kind of quiet today because Wisconsin lost to Minnesota this weekend and will not be in the Big Ten championship as a result. Plus, Wisconsin, I got to tell you, I'm looking here at the fact that Minnesota also beat Princeton. Aren't you a Princeton guy in basketball?
I am. I confess, yeah. I've never attended a Princeton sports.
Well, they lost
game.
To Minnesota. Meanwhile, Ohio State beat number one Duke last night. Did you know that? That Ohio State beat number one Duke last night in basketball?
Well, what happened with the football game? You're crying.
We're in basketball season. We're in basketball
season.
But
there was a big
Did you not notice?
Game.
No, we've transitioned.
The memory serves.
Congressman,
last
if you're voting on last week's bills, you've missed the chance. Last week's bills
you
are watched last week's bills.
An unwarranted preemptive strike against my wife, Hugh, because she's a Michigan grad. This is karma, my friend. This is karma. You can come after me, but have you no decency, sir, to come after me?
I guess
me.
I'm not getting any invites to the Gallagher household, huh? Was she on the field with everyone else who defied Governor Whitmer's lockdown orders with all the blue and gold that was on the Big House field? Replicated tweet ever was that picture.
Well, it was a spectacle. And the Big House, you have to admit, the Big House is a very cool
It's a great venue. It's a better venue when Ohio State wins. Let's get to the serious stuff, Congressman. China is involved in a genocide. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal released documents that the New York Times has been sitting on for, I think, 2 years, that prove in a secret speech to the Presidium that General Secretary Xi ordered this. It's like Khrushchev's secret speech in 1956. Should anyone be going near Beijing for the Olympics?
No, for a variety of reasons. One, as we've talked about multiple times, it will give a genocidal communist regime. And again, it's important to remind ourselves that this genocide is an official declaration, a determination that both the Trump administration, Mike Pompeo's State Department has made, as well as the Biden administration under Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's State Department has made. So this isn't just hawkish Republicans calling this a genocide. It's Democrats and Republicans, two successive administrations, as well as most major European parliaments have called this a genocide. We will be giving a propaganda victory to a genocidal communist regime. And the history of totalitarian regimes shows that they have in the past used events like the Olympics in order to enhance the power of the state. Point one. Point two, from a coronavirus perspective, if we are led to believe that we should be concerned about Omicron, given the fact that we know the Chinese Communist Party has not been forthcoming about their data, their numbers make absolutely no sense. If you dig into some of the areas where they're reporting numbers, how is it safe for our athletes to go to a country that has, from the start of the pandemic, deliberately obscured what we know about cases and what we know about the origin of the pandemic? And so I think it makes no sense to hold the Olympics in Beijing. And I am increasingly concerned about what General Secretary Xi will do after pocketing the propaganda win in Beijing. And shame on the New York Times if this is true, because the documents allegedly reveal Xi's personal involvement in the genocide in Xinjiang. And hats off to Senator Marco Rubio for getting this out into the public space and shining a light on it. At a minimum, the New York Times needs to release the approximately, I think, 86 pages that have been withheld. We need to know what's going on here. And if this is true, I think this puts a nail in the heart of whatever tiny shred of integrity the New York Times had left.
You know, I am always reminded that the Los Angeles Times would not release and still sits on a tape of that now former President Obama toasting the Palestinians because it has bad stuff in it, stuff they didn't want us to know. So they just sat on it. But that was one candidate in one presidential race or two presidential races and one speech. And it belongs to them. This is a genocide. It's like covering up the Holocaust. And the New York Times is now in the position of covering up the Holocaust that is underway in China. Can you imagine? It's like when they covered up the famine. The New York Times covered up the famine in Russia that Stalin engineered. When they sent their, I can't remember the guy's name, to Russia, and he wrote, I've been to the future, and I've, you know, all the Lincoln stuff and stuff. That's the wrong guy. Durante. New York Times reporter Durante lied about Stalin. Now they've lied about Xi. It is disgusting. They ought to be decredentialed from the White House. But I don't think this regime will do anything. This presidency will do anything. What will the Congress do? And by the way, you're not a lawyer and you didn't stay at a Holiday Inn. But if your network, if NBC sent you to Beijing and you got Omicron, doesn't NBC owe you all the damages in the world because it's a foreseeable and known risk that they are asking you to take?
100%. And by the way, the CCP owes damages to everybody that's been affected by this virus over the last 2 years, the millions of lives lost. Now, I'm not saying, and I don't think we have evidence to suggest that they deliberately release this. I think the preponderance of circumstantial evidence, or whatever the term you nerdy lawyers use, is in favor of the accidental lab leak theory, where we now know U.S. taxpayer dollars were funding gain-of-function research. And you quite rightly pressed Dr. Fauci on this program, and he did not have good answers for that. Side note, Hugh, if indeed President Biden wants to convince skeptical people to get vaccinated, the single best thing he could do would be to fire Dr. Fauci, who has lost the credibility to be a public advocate, who continued to lie, prevaricate, and was very arrogant on the Sunday News Show interview that he did with Margaret Brennan. If you dig into the whole thing, it's absolutely preposterous. But there's no question that the Chinese Communist Party covered it up in October, November, December, cost us valuable time, cost us an understanding about asymptomatic transmission, and thereby cost us millions of lives. And for that, they should be held accountable. What can we do about it, Hugh? Well, one thing.
Pause for a second. I want to ask you about Dr. Fauci, because I'm kind of stunned by this. Dr. Fauci has repeatedly come on this show. I am civil, though I am direct. And I have written that he ought to quit, ought to resign in the Washington Post. His job, though, is to speak to Americans about public health. So I routinely invite him on. My booking producer contacted his staff yesterday, and they wrote back, "Are you kidding?" And they included a link to my Washington Post story calling for his resignation. At what point does criticism of a public official entitle a public official to stop doing their job of communicating with the public?
Yeah, I think it'd be one thing if you were going on a show that was repeatedly launching ad hominem attacks against you, or sort of unreasonable attacks, but clearly that's not what you're doing. And your interview with him, I listened to it, Hugh, it was tough, but it was very civil. And you didn't dwell on sort of the harder questions the whole time. You asked him a range of fair questions. I think this is a case where, I hate to say it, but I almost think Fauci has just become in love with this self-image of being America's doctor or being the prophet of science. And the reality is, Hugh, he and his adherents are screaming science constantly and using as a cudgel to silence dissent and debate. It's a profoundly anti-scientific view because, of course, every scientific advancement, literally ever, that's ever been made is based on questioning the status quo, actively trying to disconfirm a working hypothesis. And for Fauci to castigate his critics really as heretics suggests that this isn't a scientific movement or that he's not a man of science. It's more of a quasi-religious or a secular religion right now. And so I they don't want anything that I think is going to undermine that self-image. And clearly they don't want you to ask further hard questions of Dr.
That's
Fauci.
That's it. It's a cult. The cult of Fauci. And I really would welcome him back. I would like to ask him about children and COVID, because that's the worst guidance. CDC's utterly failed. You're right. Chris Christie on this show said CDC won't get its credibility back for a generation. I think they can if they get someone in. Now, yesterday I suggested publicly and with some fairly high-ranking Biden people yesterday, they bring in Stavridis or someone like him to do the job that Ron Klain did on Ebola. Do you think we need someone like that who everybody might listen to? Because Omicron looks to me to be very bad.
Well, we just need someone who's going to be honest with us both about what we know and what we don't know. I mean, for me, and I would describe my behavior and my family's behavior as vaxxed and relaxed. So we're living our lives. My wife and I are vaccinated. We feel fine about it. The only thing that would really change our behavior, because we have a very young daughter, would be if we found out that Omicron was somehow more lethal particularly to children. But we don't know. And if you watch the Margaret Brennan interview with Fauci, the one tough question she asks him is about the complete absence of CDC data. I mean, where is the CDC? Why do we not have useful studies based on the data we've collected? Instead, we're relying upon Israeli studies. The CDC has been caught using unscientific, non-randomized studies in justifying mask wearing in some cases. It is a complete failure of public health. And so we need someone with some ounce of credibility to at least be honest with the American people about what we know and what we don't know right now. And there's a lot we don't know about Omicron.
Doctor, including, he is Dr. Gallagher because he's a PhD, Congressman Mike Gallagher, elegantly put, remarkable for a Princeton man. Buckeyes won, Princeton didn't. Way to go. Good to talk to you, Congressman. Be well. I'll be right back, America, on the Wednesday morning edition, December 1, live inside the Beltway. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Chestnuts roasting on. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, inside the Beltway Live. It's transition time in the Commonwealth of Virginia. As many listeners, longtime listeners, know, when Bill Owens was governor of Colorado, he named me warden of the Collegiate Peaks. Tim Pawlenty in Minnesota made me the commissioner of hockey. I like that. And then Arnold named me state sommelier of California. Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin joins me now. Good morning, Governor-elect Youngkin. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me back on your show. I always appreciate being with you.
Well, I'm glad you're here because there is a position honorary, of course, in Great Britain known as the Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports and Keeper of the Coast. I'm hoping you can name me the Warden of the Potomac Ports and Keeper of the Coast. And, you know, it's just a pen thing, but how about that? Can I count on that?
Well, it's a new position. I'm going to have to go make sure it's authorized, but I'll give you due consideration, Hugh, of course.
Well, thank you. I'm looking for next time we'll talk about that, you know, a warden of the Potomac Ports, keeper of the coast. Now, unfortunately, word has reached me that a local radio host by the name of Larry O'Connor, who I brought up in this business and I train, has applied to be the ambassador to Virginia's wine country to you. And unfortunately, I know Larry's background. And I'm here to warn you, that's a scandal waiting to happen, Governor-elect. You don't want to do that.
All right. Well, you can rest assured that we're doing reference checks on everybody. We're doing a thorough job evaluating all the candidates, and we'll do the work. We'll do the work on Larry O'Connor as well.
Yeah. Well, when you find out, look for the sealed documents. I don't want to trash him publicly, but those sealed records, they're bad. So, Governor-elect, how is the transition going? In all seriousness, it's a big job.
We hit the ground running following our win on November 2nd, and we've announced our transition committee, which I'm incredibly pleased with. You know, we have a group of folks on our transition committee different than transition committees of the past. We have law enforcement, we have parents, we have small business leaders. Of course, we have experts across all the most important fields, and we have some great leadership with Kay James and Senator Steve Newman leading it. We announced our landing teams last week, where we have deeply staffed teams digging into each one of the secretariat positions and making sure we fully understand the state of play. And, of course, we've been working with legislators to get ready for our first legislative session so that we can press forward with our day one game plan. I had really planned on having our Secretary of Education announced this week, particularly, and we really have a real challenge of riches in that we have so many people that have applied for these positions that we want to make sure we're doing a real thorough job in evaluating them all. I mean, you know, this election became a movement, a national movement. And we had such a big national spotlight on us that it's really brought out just an incredible depth of talent. And so we're going to be a little behind on our Secretary of Education appointment just from a timing standpoint. But the caliber and the quality of the people we're selecting from is just so encouraging. And it's been like that across the entire array of secretaries that we're going to have to appoint. So I'm very pleased with where we are. We're going to have the best team that's ever been put together in Virginia. You know, I spent my whole career putting together management teams. This is going to be the most important management team I've ever assembled. And so we're making sure I'm deeply engaged. I'm starting to meet people that I'm really impressed by, and we'll get this done in a great fashion here.
You know, Governor-elect Youngkin, in all seriousness, when you were playing for Rice, I was the acting director of the United States Office of Personnel Management when President Reagan left and new President George H.W. Bush came in. And that was a Republican transition. And I was overwhelmed. I never thought you would get the government done even by the time you take the office, because it's such a it's an enormous undertaking for the federal government. It's almost as large for a big and complicated state like Virginia. I hope you take your time on the Secretary of Education and the Superintendent of Education, because those are going to make or break your ability to get done what you promised. And so I'm sure you know that, right? You don't have to rush.
No, we don't have to rush. In fact, we won't rush. I think one of the big mistakes is that Virginia has oftentimes, and I said it during the campaign, settled. And I'm not settling. We are going to have the highest caliber group. Virginians deserve to soar. And that's the kind of team we're going to put together. I mean, we've had over 150 people apply for the senior jobs in the Secretary of Education Secretariat.
Wow.
And they're just incredibly qualified from across the country. You know, this, as I said, this movement inspired people to get engaged in Virginia, and it's brought out great talent. So I am very pleased. We're going to make sure that we are thorough and taking our time, but we'll be ready. We'll be ready to take office on January 15th.
Now, Governor-elect Youngkin, the one thing you can't multiply is the number of hours in the day. And so those two appointments, I remember Bill Bennett becoming NEH secretary. It actually made Ronald Reagan's second term when he made Bennett, and he was young. Is age going to be a disqualifier for you? Are you going to be willing to look at people who perhaps won't have long records as long as, say, I would have, but someone who's been around maybe 40s and 30s, things like that? Will you go for the talent? You've hired a lot of people in your life at Carlyle Group. Are you going to look for talent first?
Absolutely. We are not focused on age. We're focused on capability and talent. And, again, I have been so encouraged by the depth of experience, even from folks that haven't had long careers, but have had intense experiences. And, you know, this is what we want to build is an array of experiences across this cabinet. And as I've built management teams over my career, it is this array of experiences when you bring them together and get them marching in the same direction to deliver on low taxes and the best schools and safe communities and a thriving economy and job market, which we were sent to Richmond to build. And so this is what we're going to do. Virginians deserve it. They deserve this kind of team. And as I said, I'm really inspired by the quality and caliber of the folks that we're seeing. And we're working hard every day. I'm deeply engaged. I mean, it's one of these things you don't delegate away. You got to do yourself. And so we have a great team around us running the transition. And I'm really, really pleased that so many people put their hand up and were volunteered to help us. But I'm here in Richmond in the transition office, engaged in making sure that this goes the way I want it to go.
You know, Governor-elect Youngkin, again, dating myself vis-a-vis you, I was a young lawyer working for Fred Fielding and Dick Houser in the Reagan White House in the second term. And they were great, great lawyers. And Fred and Dick developed a trapdoor question on the Office of Personnel Management and the Office of Presidential Personnel Forum that came to the lawyers. Is there anything in your past that, if it becomes public and on the front page of the Washington Post, would embarrass the president? Are you asking that of everyone? Because if there is something in someone's past that they don't tell you after you've asked, that's on them. But if you don't ask, it's on you.
Yeah, rest assured, we're not only asking, but we're also doing our checking, too. And I think this is a critical part of putting together a great team, is that you don't have situations that would distract people from getting the job done. I mean, at the end of the day, Virginians have sent us here to deliver on our day one game plan and to represent all Virginians. And so we have to have folks that can get to work on an unencumbered basis and get it done. And that's why I have constantly, as we've gone through the review of folks, said, you know, are there going to be any issues? And the great result is that there are just so many qualified people who can get to work immediately and who are ready to go. And, you know, this is part of, I think, this movement, Hugh. You know, this campaign moved from just a normal gubernatorial campaign to a movement. And it sure brought people out of the woodwork who might not have considered coming to work in the Commonwealth of Virginia or stepping out of a giant career into public service. And boy, it's brought them out of the woodwork. And I am so excited about this.
Well, I think you've inspired Democrats and independents as well as Republicans with the hope that there's a government out there at the state level that would do what Doug Ducey has done in Arizona, which is just take the best and the brightest available to them and put them to work. And on the Secretary of Education and Superintendent of Education, I am reminded of President George H.W. Bush. In one room, he had David Souter. In another room, he had Edith Jones. He had short interviews with both. He picked the wrong one because David Souter did not genuinely reveal himself. Edith Jones did not genuinely reveal herself enough. She was very candid, but President Bush did not ask the right question of David Souter, which was very specific about Roe. How are you getting to the core beliefs of your Secretary of Education and Superintendent of Schools so that they will be aligned with you when it comes to renewing and invigorating and excelling in Virginia public education and higher education?
Well, in today's world, we have a deep transparency on what people believe because people write and social media post so much of their belief system. On top of that, I mean, the reality is my day one agenda is going to be our day one agenda. And we're going to make sure that the folks that are selected into this administration are fully aligned with what we're going to go get done. This isn't a moment for freelancing. This is a moment for us to deliver what we have promised we're going to go do. And particularly on education, this is an extraordinarily important time for us to lead, to make sure that we have high standards in our schools. And yes, we will have we'll have the largest education budget in the history of Virginia for teacher salaries and facilities and special education. Our charter school initiative is incredibly important to get rolling on. And that's going to really provide choice within the public school system. And finally, curriculum. And, the big issues around making sure that we teach all history, the good and the bad, so that we know where we've come from, so we know where we're going. But we also have to get critical race theory elements out of the classroom. We've got to get politics out of the classroom. And so these are the threshold philosophical issues, but also action points for our Department of Education, and we're going to make sure that our leadership there is fully aligned.
Well, I'm very impressed by your team, especially by Mrs. Yunkin, by Jeff Rowe. I like them all. I think they're all very impressive. But I hope you sit down at length with both your Secretary of Education and Superintendent and really probe the way that I wish President Bush had David Souter, because some people just lie. Some people don't disclose, and they just do it very well, and they might not have records. Last bit of special pleading, Governor. I've got a military spouse as a daughter. You got a lot of military spouses in Virginia. Who is going to be their ombudsman? Do you have a post for that? Because that's a special community with special needs, especially in the Commonwealth.
Well, it was a big part of our overall approach to serving our military and our veterans, particularly as families. And therefore, I do believe that as we press forward on our entire veteran and military agenda, I think families and military spouses are going to see a much different approach from this administration. I mean, one of the things that we know is that they have a substantially different stress on them than a normal family. And so we have to support it. And that's why we want Virginia to be the most military-friendly state in America for active military and our veterans, because one out of 11 Virginians is a veteran. And it makes our communities better. And that starts with treating families well while folks are in active duty, but then also making sure when they transition into their civilian life after their service to our country that they stay in Virginia and build their next chapter. So this is a really important part of our agenda.
That's terrific, Governor. No David Souters, no Larry O'Connors. But when we talk next, I hope that you've done the research and that I can be warden of the Potomac Post ports and keeper of the coast. Governor-elect Yunkin, have a very Merry Christmas. I know it's special to you and your family. Thank your family for their sacrifice that they've made and will be making. I appreciate your joining me this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, as always. I so enjoyed it. You have a blessed season.
You too. There you go. Warden the Potomac Post. I'm basically a blackballed Larry O'Connor, too. That's good. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Kennedy. You hear it live inside the Beltway on this first day of December 2021. Happy to welcome my friend, Senator Dan Sullivan. who, like me and other right-thinking Americans, is a Browns fan and therefore reeling after Sunday night's loss. What do you think, Senator Sullivan? Can they get it together and make the playoffs?
Good morning, Hugh. Great to be back on the show. Look, strong defense, right? And you can't complain about that. But we got to pick it up on this inconsistent offense. And whatever you want to say about Baker Mayfield, you know, he's not delivering right now. So, you know, there's an outside chance, but that was a tough loss. And the Browns should have won that on Sunday night. Should have won it.
Four interceptions. You should win a game with four. Look, I think Baker, they should sign him to the 5-year deal and then sit him down for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. That's what I think they should do, but Andrew Berry hasn't asked me. Let me ask you, Senator
Sullivan.
Yeah, but,
Sullivan. You know, he's injured. You can tell. Just watch him, right? Whether he's limping or it's his shoulder. I mean, the guy's talented, but he's not 100%. So they got to figure that out. But, yeah,
he's
four
the guy. He's the guy I want in Cleveland for the rest of my my football years. He can play Big Ben years, but sign him and heal him. Senator, let's get to your job. You're on Armed Services. You're a Marine. A story came out yesterday that China is screwing around with our space assets. That they are actively engaging in what has to be considered hostile measures in space. What do we do? What do you think of that report?
Well, look, first of all, we need to recognize that China is the biggest geostrategic threat facing our country for this entire century. We got to get serious about it. We're debating the National Defense Authorization Act right now on the Senate floor. And, Hugh, as you probably know, the National Democrats in leadership, Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Nancy Pelosi, what do they have in common? They're all Vietnam era Democrats, and they all dislike the military. So Biden put forward a budget that is a blowout budget for literally every agency in the federal government, getting double-digit increases to their budgets. Guess which two agencies he cuts their budget? Defense and Homeland Security. So no matter what else happens, this administration has to put forward serious focus on rebuilding our readiness. And Schumer and Bernie Sanders last year, when we were debating the Defense Authorization Act, had an amendment. No kidding. Sanders called it the, quote, defund the military amendment. This is during the height of defund the police. As if that wasn't enough, he put it forward. Schumer tweeted he was a proud co-sponsor of it. I got asked to debate Sanders on the floor on this. Crushed him. I think we defeated it 75-25. But they got to get serious about readiness. And right now they're putting forward a budget that is cutting defense spending. Fortunately, in the Defense Authorization Act, when we marked it up, we put forward an amendment, 3% real increase in our defense budget that passed with every member of the committee, with the exception, of course, of Elizabeth Warren. So that was a huge rebuke to the National Democratic leadership. But for decades, they've been anti-military, and it shows.
You know, I have read the Build Back Better version that came out of the House. The only fort to get any money in it is the Presidio, which gets $200 million because it's Nancy Pelosi's backyard, and it's now retired as a fort and as a park. I can't believe we're about to spend another $2 trillion, or some number of it, depends on Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema, and none of it goes to defense, Senator. That means we will have spent about $8 trillion in 3 years, none of it for defense.
And look, Hugh, it's exactly the right point to be raising. You know, Biden will talk a tough game on defense, but as you know, at the end of the day, what matters is what you're putting into it. And as I mentioned, blowout budgets for every federal agency, this massive socialist spending. But according to them, they should starve the DOD. And think about it. Just think about it. Bill Clinton, when he got into power, dramatic cut to the military. Obama, second term, he cut defense spending by 25%. It's actually one of the biggest reasons I threw my hat in the ring to run for the U.S. Senate. I'd never run for anything before that, but when I saw my beloved military, beloved Marine Corps getting gutted, I said, we got to stop this. And so this is one of the things that the national media refuses to pick up on. Decade after decade, these leaders, because they've been in for so long, Schumer, Pelosi, Biden, they have a pure, oh, Bernie for sure. He's the budget chairman. A lot of people forget that. A socialist is in charge of the American budget, but they are all anti-military. It dates back to their Vietnam era days, and it's really threatening our national security, particularly, as you mentioned at the outset, as it relates to China. The Chinese are watching this, and trust me, they're doing double-digit increases to their budget on the military every year.
Now, Senator, I mentioned the Chinese attacks on our space assets. I want to come back to that. But I do want to remind people, Jean Kirkpatrick in 1984 called the Democrats the San Francisco Democrats. Well, they are the San Francisco Democrats, every one of them. They are anti-military. And I'm glad you're making this alarm. Maybe if we get people alerted to what the Chinese are doing, I know they're engaging in genocide. I talked about that with Congressman Mike Gallagher, another Marine, last hour. No one can deny it. I don't think any American ought to go. I don't think any American sponsor ought to have anything to do with a genocidal regime now that the secret documents have been released by the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times sat on. But there was also this report. They are actively engaged in attacks on our space assets. What do you think we should do?
Well, look, what we need to do, first of all, is harden our space assets. We've been thinking for years, decades really, that space is some kind of conflict-free zone. And so much of our military systems are dependent on satellites, and they haven't been hardened. So I think this is a wake-up call for the Pentagon that, hey, in the realm of warfare, it's not just in the air and in the sea and on the land, as the Marines know. It's actually also in space, and we need to harden our assets, and we need to be, you know, we need to be much more prepared. And like I said, Q, with regard to the defense budget, we are putting forward, we Republicans, a much more robust budget. But we also need to be both overtly and covertly telling the Chinese that, hey, this is not what they should be doing, and are we have the right to retaliate. And I always say, in terms of retaliation, whether it's cyber or other things, it can be asymmetric, it can be symmetric, but it's got to be at the time of our choosing. So, again, we need to take a tougher stance with regard to China. But the biggest thing they watch, the biggest thing they watch is what we're spending on defense, not what we're saying, but what we're doing. And in that regard, we need to do more.
So last question, Senator Dan Sullivan from Alaska, member of Armed Services. The NDAA is the most important piece of legislation. It should come first. It's held up on the floor. Will it move forward in a rational way with everything that it needs today, tomorrow, the next day?
Well, first of all, I agree with you that this is one of the most important pieces of legislation. It moves every year. It's moved every year in the Congress for over 60 years. And again, this goes to the prioritization of where the National Democrats are. We passed this out of committee in July.
Wow.
Schumer brought up the bill 2 weeks ago, end of the year. And we had been calling for him to bring it to the floor saying, what in the heck are you doing? We were confirming low-level nominees for weeks as they, behind closed doors, tried to get their Build Back Better. By the way, it's Build Back Better to the 1970s. The malaise of Jimmy Carter is what they're bringing upon this
back to the future
country. I'd love to come on the show again and talk about their high energy prices, which they are purposely driving up. But now we have it on the floor, and you may have seen the NDAA. We blocked it moving forward yesterday or 2 days ago because we wanted more amendments. Look, I work on this all year being on the committee, but a lot of senators want to have the opportunity to bring amendments forward. For example, on Nord Stream, where Biden is appeasing Putin in Europe on the natural gas pipeline, we want to have amendments that we can bring to the floor. I think you're going to see that today. But this is, again, where do they prioritize? Let me give you another one that nobody has even followed at all. We right now have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs position is empty. It's empty. Why? Because Biden didn't even put forward a nominee after General Hyten had to retire due to statute. So we have an empty spot right now because they didn't care about the military. It's unforgivable.
Well, keep coming back, Senator Sullivan. Ask Senator Murkowski to join you. I hope she wins re-election. I will help her get that re-election. We're on up in Alaska. We need you two people representing America's northernmost state, the one that borders with Russia, in positions of authority in the Senate. Thank you, Dan Sullivan. I'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.